I'm Tom Hall. This is Midday. Michael Curley is an expert in energy and environmental finance who has consulted with private concerns and governments around the world. In his latest book, Paying for Tomorrow, Maintaining Our Quality of Life, he asks two important questions. Who's going to pay for the fixes we need to our increasing environmental challenges, and how will we pay for them? Michael Curley joins me in Studio A. And Be More Art, Baltimore's Journal of Art and Ideas, covers the local art scene thoroughly and imaginatively. The latest edition of their glossy magazine launches tonight. Editor and publisher Kara Ober joins me with a preview. Plus, Beetlejuice. It's not just a movie anymore. J. Wynn Russick reviews Beetlejuice the Musical when Midday starts right after the news. Good afternoon and welcome. It's Midday. I'm Tom Hall. Thanks for being with us. We got a little snow in the Baltimore area. Forecasters are calling for up to 2 inches here in Baltimore, perhaps as many as 3 inches in the Frederick area. Current temperature is 33 degrees. It is going to warm up a little bit later, so we may see the snow turning to rain as the afternoon proceeds. By tomorrow afternoon, it'll be sunny and in the high 40s. So be careful if you are driving. Stay far away from the person in front of you and keep an eye out for folks on all sides. Again, thank you for being with us today on Midday. We're going to talk about the environment, whether it's curbing climate-wrecking carbon emissions, cleaning up toxic industrial wastes, or reducing the pollution of our lakes and streams. Being good stewards of the environment is an expensive proposition. Governments here in the U.S. and around the world have been wrestling with how to pay these costs for decades, and the issues always seem to come down to this. Who should foot the bill for environmental safeguards when those costs can run into the billions of dollars? And how do we finance these burdensome but essential responsibilities fairly and efficiently? My guest today has some answers to those questions. Michael Curley is a lawyer and environmental finance expert and a visiting scholar at the Environmental Law Institute in Washington, D.C. He has served as senior financial advisor to both the U.S. Environmental Protection Agency and the World Resources Institute, and he also contributes monthly essays about the environment here on WYPR. He has written a thought-provoking new book that lays out a variety of options for addressing environmental challenges. It's called Paying for Tomorrow, Maintaining Our Quality of Life. Mike, good to see you. Welcome.
Thank you, Tom. It's nice to be here.
And listeners, if you would like to join our conversation about how to finance the environmental efforts that we need to finance, you can give us a call here at Midday, 410-662-8780. Our email, midday@wypr.org. Our Twitter handle, @MiddayWYPR. And we are streaming on the WYPR Facebook page. So, Mike, you asked two basic questions. Who's going to pay for the stuff we need to pay for it to fix the environment, and how we pay for it? And that's the second one is the one that I think eludes an awful lot of people, because it's not just a matter of tax people put the money towards, you know, Project A, Project B, Project C. There are a variety of options, are there not?
There are. But you know something? It's cool that we're from Maryland, because as I point out in the book, Maryland has the smartest method of paying for environmental improvements in the entire country. And that is something that our dear political friends refer to as the Bay Restoration Fee, but us mortals call it the flush tax. And it is, we call it the flush tax because when they started it all in 2004, the tax was based on the number of toilets in your building. Mm-hmm. So I think some genius figured out that the average home has 2.6 toilets.
So why is the Bay Restoration Fee a paradigm as to the ways, the methods in which we should be funding these things?
Lots of reasons. The most basic reason of all is its name. You know exactly what, when you see Bay Restoration Fee on your bill, you know exactly what you're paying for. When somebody talks about the flush tax, you even know even better what you're paying for. And that's number one. Number two is it's extremely cheap. It started out as $2.50 a month. They doubled it without a whimper from the public in 2012 to $5 a month, and that's still very, very cheap. And it started out paying for just sewage treatment plants, which is what we needed back in 2004. Now it pays for lots of things because we've done a good job on those sewage treatment plants. So it's very broad-based. It's very inexpensive. It's got the right name. And as the Maryland legislature is doing every year, they're paying for more. They're broadening it to pay for other things. So now that we're paying, we're starting to pay for the new environmental problems like agricultural runoff and stormwater.
And one of the criteria you list for a method of financing these things is that it needs to be broad-based.
Exactly.
As broad as possible, because everybody is affected by the environment. Everybody pollutes the environment in their own little way or big way, and so everybody needs to pay for it. We need to spread it around. So this the Bay Restoration Fee or the flush tax does that because it virtually nobody avoids paying it.
Exactly.
Right? Yeah.
Exactly.
And you mentioned that in 1970, by executive order, Nixon establishes the EPA. And then 2 years later, Congress actually passes a bill called the Clean Water Act. And the Clean Water Act was funded. The EPA was funded. But the Clean Air Act is a different story. And so environmental pollution in the air has been treated differently on the federal level, at least, than environmental pollution in water. What's the effect of that been?
The effect of it's been is that the burden is on companies, and there aren't a lot of companies that have serious smoke problems, serious air emissions, right? As opposed to on the water side, it's all of us. As you say, it's the flush tax. It's every time you flush a toilet, you're a polluter. And so the government put money into the water pollution side because it was helping the Baltimore Sewer Authority, the yada yada sewer authority, everybody. It was helping those people clean up the bay or the river or the lake or whatever or they were on. And, you know, so that's why they put it into water. But they didn't put anything comparable in the air because there weren't a lot of people involved in the air problem. It wasn't you and me that were causing the air pollution problem.
It was the big manufacturers.
Yeah, it was yeah. Exactly.
I mean, you take the train up to New York, you go through Trenton, and you see all those, smokestacks just spewing stuff out into the world.
Exactly, exactly. And so they figured, that's where the old saying, the polluter pays, that's where it really came from, is, yeah.
And you know, when it comes to water and sewage, folks in Baltimore might take issue with anybody who contends that it's not very expensive because water bills in Baltimore have doubled over the past 8 years. We've done stories here on Midday about people who live in our city who have a very difficult time paying for their water bill. I mean, the basic necessities of life. Any ideas about how subsidies for people to pay their water bills should be handled? Any ideas about whether or not the way Baltimore is being part of this consent decree that we're under with the Environmental Protection Agency, which is calling for billions of dollars of repairs to our infrastructure?
Yes, and I know you've done a show on the affordability question about people in Baltimore who lose their homes or could lose their homes because they can't pay their water bills.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, that's just total insanity. My favorite story is that in 2014, the state of Virginia gave a subsidized loan, a 1% interest loan for about $9 million to Loudoun County, Virginia. Loudoun County, Virginia is the single wealthiest place in the United States, and they gave them a subsidized loan. Rubbish. This can't go on. It's got the subsidies have to go to people in Baltimore who can't pay their water bills. That's where they belong. They belong where the money is needed, not where it's we have this. I mean, the problem is we have it in Maryland here with stormwater. Baltimore, because it's a city, has got huge amounts of stormwater problems. And that's part of the billions that they got to pay for, right? And Baltimore doesn't have any money to speak of. Up to the northeast, 20 miles northwest of here, is Howard County, which is the fifth richest county in the United States, but it doesn't have a lot of stormwater problems. Money and problems aren't together, and we got to get over it, and that's why things like the flush tax are so beautiful, is because they're so highly spread out.
What about the so-called rain tax, which Governor Hogan keeps using in terms of his rhetoric for the stormwater remediation fees? The legislature passed a bill a few years ago saying every county jurisdiction has to assess a fee to remediate stormwater. And again, as you say, cities have bigger problems with it than more rural areas because there's a lot more concrete and asphalt in cities than there are in the other places.
Well, I mean, that's absolutely right. You have the same problem with these so-called rain taxes, the stormwater fees. It's because the stormwater fees and the money and the problems don't coincide. So you get rich areas that could have a make a big contribution in poor areas that can't do that have a lot of problems. So this is not having a county rain tax is a seriously bad idea. It should either be statewide or even national.
Mm-hmm. So the federal government should play a role in subsidizing this stuff.
Well, you know,
But of course, every state governor, you know, says that as well, saying, oh, yeah, we need to partner with the federal government.
Yeah, right. Yeah. Your partners, right. But, you know, there's some truth. If people would take out their phone bill and take a look at it, they will find at the bottom of that phone bill a thing called the Federal Universal Service Fee. What that fee is so that everybody in the United States can have access to telecommunications and broadband, which means that kids sitting on mountaintops in Montana who don't have good internet service, they'll get good internet service because of this fee that you and I pay, right? We should have that for water. I mean,
spreading it out that far and wide, it would be relatively inexpensive for the people paying for it individually?
Absolutely.
So you think doing it on a county-by-county basis is the wrong way to do it? Because there are some counties that have it, some counties that don't right now.
And I think one county that passed it, it was $1 per house.
Yeah.
I mean, just for a joke, they passed it almost.
Right. You suggest a variety of ways of how to finance this stuff. And this is what you do. You finance water systems. You finance these kinds of big projects and stuff. One is called adoption, right? We talk about one of the big problems we have with the Chesapeake Bay is runoff from agriculture, yes. Chicken manure, cow stuff, all that business. It's going into the bay. There are certain states like Maryland that have stringent requirements for farmers about what they're allowed to dump into the bay and what they're not. And then there are other states like Pennsylvania, just to the north of us, that have almost no regulations at all for the farmers.
Yes.
So what happens in Maryland is a lot of the stuff from Pennsylvania flows downstream into the Chesapeake here in Maryland. How does that kind of conflict get worked out?
Well, the problem is the money. I mean, what I always like to tell people is, what's Governor Wolf going to do in Pennsylvania? Pull up at a farmhouse and with his limo and go in and tell the farmer that he has to build a $50,000 project to stop the agricultural runoff from his farm? And by the way, Mr. Farmer, you can pay for it yourself. All right, you can borrow the money, long-term low interest rates, but you still have to pay for it yourself. That's not going to happen. Same thing with stormwater. I mean, think of a big church here in Baltimore with a couple of acres of parking lot, right? And it's all concrete parking lot. You think the mayor of Baltimore is going to pick up the phone and call the pastor of that church and tell him to rip up the parking lot and put permeable pavement, which is green? It's green infrastructure. Tell him to put that in. And by the way, sir, take it out of your collection plate. This isn't going to happen. This isn't going to happen.
So the political reality is that that's a non-starter.
Exactly.
So what is the solution then?
The solution is like I said, you got to have fees. You got to have these small but very broad-based fees like the Federal Universal Service Fee.
You talk about sponsorship. Sponsorship isn't a grant, but it's actually a loan. How does a sponsorship model work for financing?
Well, this is the thing, is that the money actually comes out of the fund, the state fund that was set up by EPA. Because what happens is you're a sewage treatment plant, you need $10 million, right? And I'm an upstream project, let's say, to preserve some forest land, which is preserving watershed, right? So the Clean Water State Revolving Fund, which is what the program is, they come to you and say, all right, you got a $10 million project. We'll give you a loan at 4%. But if you'll make your loan $11 million, because these people can't borrow, but then give them the $1 million for their project to preserve the trees, will lower your interest rate. And that's what a sponsorship project is the sewer authority sponsors the forest project that's, in some cases, miles away from them. This is a concept that was started by Ohio back in 1997, and only 5 states in the entire country have picked up on it.
And that's
such a tragedy.
There are paradigms around the country for methods that are working.
Right? Yes, yes.
Right. We'll talk about more of them when we come back from a break. Michael Curley, he's the author of Paying for Tomorrow, Maintaining Our Quality of Life. When we come back from the break, you are welcome to join us at 410-662-8780, our email midday@wypr.org, our Twitter handle @MiddayWYPR. You can follow me on Twitter @TomHallWYPR. You can also catch us on the WIPR Facebook page. Stay with us. We'll be right back.
This is Your Public Radio, 88.1 WYPR.
Welcome back. It's midday again. An update from the National Weather Service. Current temperature in the Baltimore area around 33 degrees. They are calling for about 2 inches of accumulation of snow here in the metro Baltimore area, perhaps as much as 3 inches out in the western part of the state. We expect that the snow will turn to rain a little bit later this afternoon, and then tomorrow the sun will be out and it will be near 50 degrees. I am Tom Hall. You're listening to Midday. By the way, on tomorrow's show, it's the Midday News Wrap. We're going to take a look at some of the big local stories of the week, as well as the prospects for a Brexit agreement between Britain and the European Union. Frank Langfitt from NPR will join us, as well as Ian Duncan from the Baltimore Sun. Also, the Pulitzer Prize-winning poet and lyricist Paul Muldoon will be here. He teaches poetry at Princeton, and he's the former poetry editor for the New Yorker magazine. In addition to poetry, he writes song lyrics for the likes of Warren Zevon and others. Muldoon is performing with his band called Rogue Oliphant, and he's given a poetry workshop at the Creative Alliance in Baltimore this weekend, but we'll talk to Paul Muldoon tomorrow here on Midday. Coming up a little later today, Kara Ober. She's the editor of Be More Art, and she's going to preview the latest edition of that beautiful art journal. And Jay Wynn Russick has her weekly theater review. So now we continue our conversation with Michael Curley about his new book. It's about the environment. It's called Paying for Tomorrow, Maintaining Our Quality of Life. Our phone number here on Midday, 410-662-8780. Our email, midday at WYPR.org. Our Twitter handle, at Midday WYPR. And we are streaming on the WIPR Facebook page. So, Mike, again, you're a big fan of the Bay Restoration Fund.
Mm-hmm.
It's broadly based. It's not all that much money on an individual basis. How about its efficacy? I mean, is it working? Is the Bay getting better?
Yes, the Bay is getting better. It was originally enacted in 2004 to deal with the 67 largest sewage treatment plants, and they've done a terrific job, and the problems from there are just, they've really solved those problems. But, of course, there's more. The mm-hmm. problems, right? And there is a problem with the Bay. The only problem with the Bay Restoration Fee is not a problem itself. It's a problem that the Maryland Constitution prohibits pledging those revenues, right? You don't collect the Bay Restoration Fee and spend it. You collect it and you pay debt service on bonds that are issued, so you can issue the bonds today so you can solve the problems today. So you don't have to wait 20 years to do that, right? Okay, so they're paying bonds, right?
Pay the interest on those bonds.
And the principal back, mm-hmm. okay? But the Maryland Constitution says you can only do this for 15 years at a time. That's just unbelievable. I had a law student check this out. One of the guys down in Annapolis many years ago said, "Oh well, we don't want to borrow for more than that because we might lose our AAA rating." Rubbish. I had my law student check all of the 18 states that have AAA ratings, like Maryland. Maryland has the shortest period of time.
So you're saying that the period of time for the loan should be extended to 30 years?
Oh, easy.
And wouldn't that cost more money though?
No,
if you got to borrow a lot more money and pay it over a longer period of time, would that reduce the cost or increase it?
It would keep it the same, right? You would keep it the same, but here's the deal: is that if you can borrow $100 for 15 years and pay X, you can pay X and borrow for 30 years, but you can borrow $160. You can borrow 60% more money to go to the Bay today. Right? So there's 60% more money for the same dollars you put out. Now, Tom, you know...
But there are people who think that would affect the bond rating, and that's the argument against.
And it's not true.
And you're saying it's not true.
Yeah.
Uh-huh. Let's go to the phones. Janet in Towson, welcome to Midday with Michael Curley.
Hi, thank you.
Hi, Janet.
I just have two comments. One is the constant referral of the stormwater tax as a rain tax is really a misnomer. It should be called a runoff tax. I think, you know, the people who are opposed to paying any taxes to preserve the environment really caught on to this glitchy term, rain tax. Rain, you know, falling in woods and, you know, is not a runoff problem. It doesn't affect our stormwater. But rain falling on our driveways and roadways and houses create a problem, and it's runoff. And the other thing is, I have a question about the Clean Air Act, and I think if and I may be misspeaking, but I think I understand that the gentleman said that the you can't tax broadly for clean air because there are just a small number of big polluters. Well, I think there are a large number of little polluters, and that is us who drive every day in cars, and many of them are really highly polluting cars. And I know the automobile industry creates these polluting cars, but the drivers buy them, and
sure.
I think
okay.
it's unfair.
Well, thanks for that comment, Janet. And Mike, you're right about the pollution
right.
from cars. You actually say that to a certain extent we've got that under control.
We've got it under control because the EPA can. There are four or five car manufacturers, right? And they grab them by the neck, and that they can make them pay. So yes, when you make your car payment, you're paying for the environment. You're paying for the environmental controls on that car.
Do you have concerns, though, for example, it's just been in the news somewhat recently, the Trump administration and that EPA has now lessened the requirements for more fuel-efficient cars and more environmentally good cars. They've extended the deadlines for companies to meet this, and we hear all the time that companies are getting out of the business of making compact cars. It's all SUVs. It's all larger vehicles. Does that give you any concern?
Yeah, it sure does. I mean,
there incentives that the government should be doing to make different kinds of cars, to have cars that pollute less?
As long as you're getting the consumer to pay at the level of the when he buys a car, you're in good shape. I mean, because people pay for cars over a large number of years, and that's the way it should happen. It should be small payments over a large period of time. So that's the way it should be done. But these rollbacks are just awful.
Nutrient credit trading. What's that?
Oh, well, nutrient credit. If you think of a Pennsylvania farmer who produces his fields produce nutrients, right? And they get washed off his field and they get into the rivers. Okay, the Susquehanna River, right? So what you do is you get the farmer to do a project to retard that, right? And as a result of that, he earns
credits.
Out of
that farmer's own pocket.
But let's just say the project, right?
Mm-hmm.
And he's going to earn X number of credits. And you get the Baltimore Sewer Authority, who's downstream, that needs credits to meet their permit, right? Their sewage permit, to discharge permit, right? So they pay for the farmer's project. They give the farmer the money to do the project, and then they get the credits for it.
But do they get the credits maybe, but is there actually less pollution coming down there? I mean,
the farmer does the project.
The farmer does the project. So
yeah.
So the credit is valid. It's not just some paper pushing thing that, you know, oh, I have a credit for this. It's like the smokestacks that we see. There are credits for those as well. Don't people trade those as well?
I don't think in the air business they do, but certainly you can in the water business. But, you know, the GAO did a study of this. There's only one state in the entire country that does, like, trading between farms and cities. It's Pennsylvania. And Pennsylvania's program, they haven't done a sale in, like, 2 or 3 years. It's just awful.
I mean, a big part of this is regionalization. I mean,
mm-hmm.
the governor of Maryland, and by the way, to Janet's point about how people have picked up on this terminology of the rain tax. I mean, the governor had ads during his election campaign saying, you know, we stopped taxing the rain. I mean, he
mm-hmm.
made it sound like it was this terrible, onerous thing. There are county executives who ran against it, most notably Alan Kittleman, the soon-to-be former county executive of Howard County, who was against the stormwater remediation fee in that county. For whatever reason, he's lost election. Calvin Ball is going to take the mantle of Howard County in just a few weeks. So, political leaders have a lot to do with this. I mean, people are defining these issues by the rhetoric that they're using.
Yes.
You talk about the need for regional funds and that there are these environmental funds that need to have certain characteristics. One of them you've already mentioned, that people really need to know exactly what the money's going for. I mean, you're not going to get public support for them unless people know what it's called.
Exactly.
Yeah, so the flush tax is
yes,
a perfect.
Right.
Perfect. You say they should be as broad-based as possible and that they the money shouldn't be piddled away. That's the way you put it in your book.
Yeah.
So how do you decide that there's a paucity of piddling going on?
Well, again, it's going back to the flush tax. They didn't collect the flush tax every year and hand it out nickel and dime. They put the money in the bank. They issued a huge amount of bonds to solve the problems of the Bay today. And they're going to pay off those bonds over the period of time. That's exactly what you should do. It's exactly what you should do. Don't piddle the money away. Keep the money to use it for paying principal and interest on bonds. Issue the bonds today and solve the problems today.
And you really are saying that Maryland can serve as a paradigm for a lot of other places.
Oh, yeah. Really.
Good for us.
And, the flush tax is a bit of an accident, but it's a wonderful accident, right?
Tranching. When you talk about, you have a chapter in the book called Credit Enhancement. Let's first of all start with that. I mean, what is credit enhancement? What does that mean?
It means like getting a state guarantee on your bonds or buying insurance for the payments on your bonds, stuff like that.
All right. So it sort of reduces the risk, right?
It's a guarantee. It reduces the risk. That's right. And therefore the interest rate.
Right. So if you don't pay, it reduces the risk that you're going to default. So tranching, it comes from the French word for slice. So how does that fit into a financing option?
You slice, if you think of debt, you slice it sideways. So that the guy who has the first tranche, if anybody loses, let's just say you got 1,000 apartments. Right, and you're collecting rent from all of them. What's the possibility that all 1,000 are going to pay exactly on the same day? Zero. Right. There's always a couple of people who are sick or gone or something like that. Right. So if you divide it up into, let's say, the first 10 and the last 10 and the last 990, it's the people who have the first 10 that are going to get burned every month. That's tranching. And in finance, they call it the Z tranche, because XYZ, it has the most risk, is the Z tranche. You're going to lose, if you get the Z tranche, you're going to lose some money. But on the other hand, the Z tranche pays the highest rate of interest.
Right. So you get compensated. The risk and reward are directly related.
Right.
Joe comments on Facebook, and you alluded to this a little bit earlier in the show, Mike. A great many with large parking lots are nonprofits, they're churches. How do we address these organizations' needs? I mean, what would be the way of having better stormwater remediation here, in which so much real estate in the city of Baltimore is, in fact, taken up by nonprofits? Johns Hopkins University, the largest employer in the state, has this huge footprint in the city. And as you mentioned, and as Joe mentions, you know, these parking lots and these large areas of asphalt are often owned by nonprofits. What's the best way to approach that problem?
With a broad-based fee.
Mm-hmm.
And then that's the only way to approach
a statewide broad-based fee.
At least.
So,
if you can't do the federal universal service fee, do a Maryland. Do the plush tax. It's the same thing.
So how do you convince folks on the Western Maryland or on the Eastern Shore that they should be paying a fee to remediate stormwater in downtown Baltimore? I mean, politically, is that viable?
I think it's as viable as asking them, well, to pay for the 67 sewage treatment plants that they were asked to pay for in 2004. Now, they had to broaden that to include, which they should have done, it was a very good idea, septic tanks. But, you know, the air we breathe, they breathe out in Garrett County. The water, it all comes home.
Tax revenue intercepts. You write in the book about the example of New York City. In the 1970s, we remember the headlines in the daily news, you know, the city is bankrupt. How'd they turn that thing around, and is that a form of financing that others could profit from?
Well, there's a sales tax in New York like there is everywhere, and there's a city sales tax and a state sales tax. And the city collected in the city. The city collects it for everybody, and they mail a check to Albany, right? So what happens is, instead of doing that, is they kept the Albany portion as a guarantee that the city would pay their bonds. And so, in other words, this is money that doesn't belong to the city, but the state allowed them to use it to guarantee the city's bonds. Very smart idea. There was not a penny taken out of anybody's pocket. And the result was AAA bonds, which meant everybody saved money. Really brilliant
because
idea.
Because it's cheaper to borrow the money under a AAA rating.
Oh, absolutely, yes.
Right. Yeah. Interesting. So, I mean, as goes New York City, so goes the state. And various governors were able to convince the rest of the state that was okay to bail out New York.
Yeah. And, I mean, they do this in several countries as well. Yeah.
Well, not knowing almost anything about finance, I can't say that I understood everything in your book, but I did find it quite fascinating. And I appreciate your coming in and talking. talking about. Good to see you.
Well, good to see you, Tom, and thanks very much for inviting me.
Michael Curley, he's a lawyer, an environmental finance expert, and a visiting scholar at the Environmental Law Institute in Washington, D.C. His latest book is called Paying for Tomorrow, Maintaining Our Quality of Life. Every month or so, Michael also presents commentaries on the environment right here on WIPR. You can hear those commentaries from Mike and others Tuesday mornings at 10:04. We got lots more coming up on Midday. I'm Tom Hall. Stay with us.
This is Your Public Radio, 88.1 WYPR.